guess who's coming to dinner, or at least has been invited, and the news that the UN has invited Iran to the talks in Switzerland this Wednesday on ending the nearly three-year-old civil war in Syria has thrown those talks in doubt. Syria's main Western-backed opposition group, which only just RSVP'd that its members would attend, now says it won't if Iran is there. The U.S. is asking the UN to drop the invitation, and there have been meetings about that in New York today. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said yesterday that Iran has agreed to the premise of the talks, which were to pave a way to remove President Bashar al-Assad from office. But, of course, Assad doesn't agree with that premise, and the U.S. worries that Iran doesn't either. The BBC's Jonathan Marcus joins us from London. And, Jonathan, what do you make of this diplomatic back and forth over Iran being part of these talks?
Well, it's making what were going to be talks with a very uncertain outcome looking very chaotic even before those due to attend have actually reached the negotiating chamber. I think perhaps back in the UN they'll be looking at books of etiquette to see perhaps how you can take back invitations that have been given. I think it's clear that perhaps the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon went ahead with this invitation, having got an assurance himself, he says, from the Iranians that they back all of the conditions associated with the first Geneva meeting a couple of years ago. Of course, the Iranians now are saying, no, they don't accept that kind of precondition. And of course, the crucial thing we're talking about here, the real business of these talks in Geneva, it is about the Assad regime stepping down, about a new transitional government being formed by mutual consent between the opposition and elements of the existing regime, but one where Mr. Assad and his key henchmen would have no part. Now, it's almost certain that the Iranians do not accept that. It's clear the Assad regime doesn't accept that. So it's a curious kind of dispute, but it's clear to me that an invitation was issued, perhaps prematurely, and what the Americans and the British are trying to do now to retrieve the situation is trying to extract some kind of explicit commitment from Tehran. If that commitment isn't made, perhaps in some kind of a way the invitation can be rescinded, but it's going to be very difficult.
Well, we're reminded that Iran is President Assad's main ally in the region. Iran, of course, supports Hezbollah in neighboring Lebanon. Hezbollah has been fighting inside Syria on the side of Assad's regime. And then there's something else going on. We're wondering if maybe there was something else the UN was trying to do with this invitation, because we see today that Iran has halted uranium enrichment at 20%. That's below the level needed to make a weapon. It was something they promised to do, but it's come today, and sanctions are already being eased. So was there some sort of quid pro quo there? You reduce your uranium enrichment production sooner than expected and you get an invitation?
No, I don't think the Iranians are doing anything that they shouldn't be doing sooner than expected. There is no explicit linkage with the situation in Syria. Clearly, there is a kind of a linkage in that you might say with Iran kind of coming in from the cold on its nuclear dossier, it's a strange time to be picking a fight with Iran on Syria. But as I say, I think that's probably because perhaps this invitation was issued a little bit too readily. Maybe the UN Secretary General felt that the assurances from Tehran were sufficient. They're clearly not sufficient for countries like the United States and Britain, and they're certainly not sufficient for the mainstream Syrian opposition, or at least the Western-backed Syrian opposition, perhaps we should call it, which was going to attend the talks, because they're now saying plump and plain, if the Iranians don't accept the conditions that are required, they are not going to be sitting there with the Iranians.
We'll talk about the opposition for just a second before we let you go. You wrote on the BBC website that the main opposition group supported by the West doesn't really represent the rebels on the ground in Syria anyway. We know that some of the original Syrian nationalist rebels are now fighting the foreign, many al-Qaeda-backed rebels who have come into the country in some cases. So what do you mean that this opposition group doesn't represent the rebels on the ground. Do you mean because of so many who've come in from outside the country?
No, I don't. I think they don't even represent the more moderate rebels who are fighting on the ground. There is essentially a split to a large extent between the political actors, figures who have been in exile, people who have long-standing been in the opposition to the Syrian regime, and the actual popular movement on the ground, the rebels who are actually doing the fighting. There is not a clear and strong linkage. There are obviously some links, of course, but what I'm saying there essentially is that the people, the Western-backed opposition that is due to go to the Geneva talks is not hugely representative of the people actually doing the fighting on the ground. And those people doing the fighting on the ground don't really want to have any part in this particular negotiating process. So you have a really rather bizarre situation here. You have a set of negotiations which are being billed as an opportunity to bring peace to this awful struggle in Syria. And the two sets of participants, one of them the Syrian regime, which despite what it says, clearly has no intention of stepping down or giving up power. And on the other hand, the opposition backed by the West, which clearly would like to see fundamental changes in Syria, changes which would be palatable to Washington and to London and to Paris and so on and so forth. But they are not hugely representative of the people actually doing the fighting. So it's a very curious set of circumstances, and one, I think, very good reason why we shouldn't hold out huge hopes for this particular peace process moving forward.
Okay, well, that's disappointing. The BBC's diplomatic correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, in London. Thanks so much, as always.
Thank you.